Today we're going to create a mashup, a fun and adventurous way to make something fresh out of something stale.
And on the cool check-in, center stage on the mic, and we putting it on wax, it's the new style.
4 and 3 and 2 and 1.
What up?
We're gonna stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
My mother's mother's personal library had over 1,000 books, and her bedroom closet was cluttered with guns. And she helped raise her first grandson with a switch and a message. Her patience was not to be tested. A nurse who taught 2 languages and expected her progeny to excel. Quick to tell you, tough titty, raised 4 children by moving back and forth between southern and northern cities, told my mother, no way. Yeah, you and that baby can move in, but ain't no grown man moving into my house on no day. No pity. The bosom was warm, but the gangster was gritty. Pretty girl, piano player, singer, matriarch, cared for her parents for years while secretly dying of cancer, but still never let anything tear her family apart. My grandmother, Eula English, was my heart. My mother's mother's mother was a school teacher. A black woman with a college degree in the 1930s and 40s, long before these underachievers came up with excuses, would do whatever she had to do to make sure her descendants didn't end up shiftless and useless, use candy to motivate the children in the neighborhood to study the Bible because she believed that that was where the truth is. Ruthless when disrespected, connected nouns and verbs to put your self-concept in check, could be expected to rip your ego apart. Named after a city in Texas, my great-grandmother, Galveston McNeil, was my heart. My mother's 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 mother was a rider, type to show up inside her son-in-law's living room and just take over, tell him, look, I'm like a general and I raised my daughter to only roll with soldiers. Born in 1882, transcended 3 years before my start, famous for lighting cigarettes and putting men in their places, my great-great-grandmother Sarah Giss was my heart. My father's mother was a social worker, a black woman with a college degree in the 1950s who bought a house for her siblings and her parents and raised her children to either get educated or get busy. Told her husband, look, if I'm going on a vacation, you could best believe my grandson is always coming with me. Comprehended. Told my mother, if anybody steps to my grandchild and gets knocked out, never punish him if he gets suspended. Just ask him how it'd start. My paternal grandmother, Flora Acey, was my heart. And my mother is a black nationalist with a master's degree in mathematics who's been programming computers since before they had keyboards. I'm talking punch cards. And didn't care about my rough housing in the street, but if I ever disrespected her, I got punched hard. And then hit with switches till I blacked out like them computer glitches. And if I came home with B's, she would make me study more to ensure I get the picture. Like tons of megapixels, she developed me to be sharp. Still my favorite person in the world, my mother, Jacqueline Acey, is my heart. I'm a father to my son, and I've been one since the beginning. But every advantage I've ever given him has been the product of 5 women.
Bobby Gibb was born on November 2nd, 1942, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She was a teen in the 50s when decent women just worked jobs until they found a husband. Decent women did not run. Mm-hmm. Quote, you started to become a woman and suddenly there were all these incredible constraints. I could see coming down the line that I was going to have to live in a box as a woman, literally locked up in a house. We were expected to be housewives and that's all. We weren't expected to have minds. We weren't expected to have bodies that ran. She was pre-med in college, but as a teen began running 4 or 5 miles through the woods near her home. In 1964, she saw the Boston Marathon on TV for the first time, and right there, she knew she'd run in that race someday. She started training on her own, running in nurse's shoes because women's running shoes were not made.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing that in 1966, there were no women's running shoes? People act like this country is so far advanced, but that's... Think about how close in time that is. That's insane.
And don't you think, in a way, the reason why we still have, like, sexism and racism is because we haven't fully processed what just happened?
Not at all. Like, not even remotely have we processed.
That is crazy. No 1966.
No one thinks about this.
Yeah.
Except, of course, women who understand
right.
what the struggle is.
We're like,
is
actually, like, no, it's legal. It's fine. You're good. We're just going to tell you what you can do with your bodies. Okay? All right.
Sound good?
Good deal.
Does that sound good, ladies?
Good deal. You guys can run, but then we get control of most of the...
All the parts.
All the parts, really.
In 1966, Roberta Bobby Gibb applied to enter the Boston Marathon, but was denied. Will Cloney, the Boston Marathon race director that year, wrote to her and explained that women were not capable of running a marathon.
I'm sorry, you foolish, foolish girl. It's for your own good. You see, your legs will drop off.
Oh, not far.
Oh.
The most a woman could run was only a mile and a half. That was the longest AAU-sanctioned race.
Can I run it 20 times?
At the time, it was believed running could lead to women having big legs, growing hair on their chests, and their uteruses falling out.
Oh, my God.
It's for your own good.
She started as a woman, and now she's a barren ape.
A tall one,
I told
but a barren one.
I told you.
Many literally thought women would die if they ran a marathon.
And it's just founded in total nonsense.
Yeah, there's absolutely no...
Just because men. Just because men. Because white men.
People had thought this for a long time. But Gibb knew this wasn't true because she wasn't a moron. Quote, at that point, I was enraged. Here they were, stopping me from doing what I love because I belong to a certain class of person. It was a double bind. How could you prove you can do something if you're not allowed to do it? Well, that's the whole point, Missy!
Yeah, you've really condensed what we're saying.
So Bobby Gibb set out to prove everyone wrong. Now, she had trained and ran up to 40 miles.
So she was a chimpanzee.
In the morning of the race in 1966, she hid in the bushes near the start. When the starting gun went off, she just eased into the middle of the pack.
Oh, boy. I think I know which way our boy's going.
Bobby was wearing boy sneakers, her brother's Bermuda shorts, a bathing suit, and a sweatshirt to hide her figure, and put the hood up to hide her hair.
Okay. So she's just like the Unabomber in a one-piece.
From a ways off, she looked like a man, but close up, her fellow racers knew right away she was a woman. And they were supportive, even going as far as to tell her if anyone tried to stop her from finishing, they would not allow it.
I'm excited.
Well, I wish. So she started feeling more comfortable, and she took off her sweatshirt, and now everyone knew a woman was running in the race. Instead of booing or setting her on fire, the men cheered and women cried as she passed by.
Oh.
A local radio... Well, imagine this.
Yeah, I get it.
Imagine it's the mid-60s. It's just every time I say it, it makes my
centuries ago.
Yeah, so it's centuries.
The dark ages.
It's the mid-60s. You know what you're capable of. You know because of your body that you're able to do this. And you actually are seeing for the first time a woman going, fuck you.
They might have been crying because they knew she was going to die in 0.5
miles.
That's
what I'm talking about. Well, they're how many of these women were terrified that her uterus was going to fall out?
Oh, God. I hope one of the male runners doesn't slip on her womb.
But see, we told you someone would get hurt.
Well.
And now his uterus is on the ground. That gentleman has a broken leg.
Wait a minute.
A local radio station started reporting her progress. When she passed Wellesley College, the women students were waiting, screaming, and cheering. Bobby knew how important this was. I was actually running way slower than I wanted to. I was saving my energy because I knew that the worst thing that could happen would be if I didn't finish. I had this huge weight of responsibility on me. Here I was, making this very public statement. If I had collapsed or hadn't finished, I would have set women back another 50 years or maybe longer. Bobby Gibb, who did not have her uterus fall out, finished ahead of 290 of the race's 415 official entrants.
Okay.
She had a running time of 3 hours, 21 minutes.
Wow, that's really good.
The governor met her at the finish line and shook her hand. Bobby thought her running of the marathon in a good time when opened up the race to women. It was proof women were strong enough to run the full marathon. Now, he didn't come after her, and I could not find any reason why. But I'm assuming that he was concerned about all the positive news coming out, right? So it's on the radio. The governor's coming down. Like, everyone is saying this is awesome.
Right, but he's...
So I think he didn't know what to do.
He's just sitting in a cold hot tub making it boil with his rage.
An article appeared in Sports Illustrated titled, A Game Girl in a Man's Game.
Oh my God, seriously?
Last week, a tidy-looking and pretty 23-year-old blonde named Roberta Gibb not only started but also covered the 26-mile, 385 course.
Leading us to believe she's immortal.
Now, let's just take a look at that sentence. Super hot chick first.
Mm-hmm.
Second, she did this thing.
Yeah.
But in the 1967, the marathon was still not open to women. A year later.
Yeah.
Who's she kidding? She runs in leotards and all that. Why didn't she even run in women's events? She never does. The Gibb dame don't run in anything.
He's like got Trumpian nicknames.
Oh, sweaty Bobby. Crooked Bobby.
Catherine Switzer was born on January 5th, 1947, and raised in Fairfax County, Virginia. Catherine wanted to be a cheerleader, but her father didn't want that for his daughter, explaining that it was better to be cheered for.
Hmm.
Huh?
Yeah, because they really are cheer followers, if you think about it.
Well, if you think about it, at this time, for you to be someone who breaks through and does something important, you have to have either a father or a mother who's mm-hmm. saying, go do it. Probably more importantly, to have a father, because he is part of the system that's keeping you down. Right?
Ironically, women needed balls.
That's what I'm talking about. Catherine started running when she was 12. Her father pushed her into it, telling
her... Literally, get in the race!
Her father pushed her into running, telling her running a mile a day would help her earn a spot on the school field hockey team. This was when no one was running on the streets, especially not girls, but Catherine was soon running 3 miles a day. She would even run a mile after hockey training, although her coach held it against her, saying if she had the energy to run after practice, she wasn't trying hard enough during practice.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Catherine went to Lynchburg College.
Okay.
If anybody doesn't know it, crazy religious town, crazy religious college.
Our numbers there are great.
In Lynchburg?
Oh, yeah. Big fans.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Our numbers have spiked there.
At the school, she was spotted by the school's track and field coach. Since there was no women's team, because there were no women's teams anywhere, he asked her to run for the men's team. So naturally, the people of Lynchburg College lost their
edge. Of course. Yeah, she shouldn't be doing that.
She was in the press and now receiving hate mail that warned her God would strike her down for the obscene practice of running with men. So, in December 1966, Catherine met Arnie Briggs, who had been training for years with the Syracuse team. So he's an older guy that's been training with him. Arnie was the university mailman and had run in 15 Boston marathons. He started working with Catherine and soon had her running 10 miles per training session. But when she said she wanted to run the Boston Marathon, he said, "No woman can run the Boston Marathon."
But it's...
I know. He's training her. I know.
Okay.
Arnie insisted it was too far for a fragile woman to run, and then lost it when Catherine brought up Bobby Gibb. Quote, "No dame has ever run the Boston Marathon. If a woman could do it, you could, but you have to prove it to me. If you ran the distance in practice, I'd be the first to take you to Boston." So he's like a climate denier, climate change denier, in the fact that he doesn't think Bobby Gibb actually did it. He kind of thinks it's a myth.
Well, look, the jury's still out. I think we can say that.
So she trained.
There's a lot of scientists who don't think she ran.
Right. A lot, like there's like
1%.
Yeah, it's 1.7%. But they're a pretty strong unit.
Right.
So Catherine trained and trained. 3 weeks before the marathon, Catherine and Arnie ran 26 miles.
And he was like, "All right, and then, I know you have a twin sister."
And then Catherine looked at him and said, "I'm not done." And she insisted they run 5 miles more.
Oh, boy.
How about that? Stick that up your ass.
I'm curious what his reaction... I mean,
Arnie had no argument. He agreed she could run.
All right. I guess you can.
But Arnie declared she had to register first or she'd be in the shit with the Amateur Athletics Union, an organization that still didn't think women could run without their uteruses falling out, even though a woman had already run a marathon.
She must have, like, taped her vagina or something.
She put a plug in. Clearly she had a plug in.
Obviously.
Arnie and Catherine checked the rule book. There was no mention of gender. No official guidelines whatsoever.
It's inferred.
Right. Bobby Gibb had been denied due to being a woman, but there was no official rule barring a woman. They just assumed that it was so outlandish and insane that they didn't have to put it in the rule book.
Right. Yeah, well, it's like
it's like saying We don't have rules against turtles driving cars.
It's like in kids' movies, like there'll always be like a moment in like a movie where like there's like a council of judges and someone will be like, "I don't see anything in the rule book that says that a Sasquatch can't play basketball."
Thank you. Catherine signed her entry form K.V. Switzer to avoid detection as a woman. She sent it in along with the $2 entry fee. Her boyfriend, Tom Miller, was a 235-pound ex-All-American football player and a nationally ranked hammer thrower.
Whoa.
I assume a hammer throwing is some sort of track and field thing as opposed to a guy just running around throwing hammers.
No, he's a furious carpenter.
Okay.
Yeah. Fair. No. It is not a sport. He's been jailed.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, no, it's homicidal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tom now said he was going to run in the marathon, but that he didn't need to train because, quote, if a girl can run a marathon, I can run a marathon.
Sounds like she was probably in a pretty healthy relationship. He seems supportive.
So he's just running because he doesn't want his girlfriend to out athletic him.
Well, and plus you're going to want someone to carry your uterus across the finish line for you. Don't leave it out there.
Well, I mean, still to this day, the Boston Marathon, they give you a uterus bag.
Yeah, no, that's the big silver thing at the end. Yeah.
Well, in case it falls out during the race, yeah. You can quickly capture it.
No, yeah, you got to run with a little, like, basket under you that sort of just drapes.
On the morning of April 18th, 1967, Catherine decided she wanted to look feminine, so she put on lipstick and gold earrings.
Oh, boy.
But it was cold and snowy, so she also put on a big sweatshirt. At the gate, Boston Athletic Association officials in long overcoats and felt dress hats were checking the numbers of the racers. They were either too in a hurry to notice or didn't care that she was a woman because she got through. Catherine put on her number, 261, and started warming up. Then men began to approach her and wish her good luck. Tom saw her lipstick and told her to take it off because he was worried she'd be noticed, but Catherine refused.
Okay.
The gun went off, and Catherine ran with Arnie, Tom, and another runner from the Syracuse team. The first couple of miles went with no problems. They ran beside each other, getting a few cheers from spectators.
The uterus is about to drop, isn't it?
But they would not remain anonymous for long. At mile four, a press truck pulled up beside them with the cameras on. Catherine was the first woman wearing a number, and the press knew this was a big deal. As soon as the press were on it, Jock Semple knew. Jock was not happy.
That's what I wanted to hear.
That she had managed to hoodwink officials and get a number. Jock was in another truck that he ordered to pull ahead of Catherine.
Oh, dearie me. Follow that woman.
He then leapt out, and he stood in the middle of the road in his overcoat and felt hat, shaking his finger at Catherine.
No, no, no. Naughty, naughty.
As she passed, he said something she did not understand. Then he reached for her hand. He just got a hold of her glove instead and ripped it off. She had to do a stutter step to get around. At first, she thought he was just some crazy spectator.
Well, in a way.
Right. I mean, he can be both.
He's both.
But then she saw that he had a blue and gold BAA ribbon on his lapel. But Jock wasn't done. Quote, moments later, I heard the scraping noise of leather shoes coming up fast behind me. When a runner hears that kind of noise, it's usually danger, like hearing a dog's paws on the pavement. Instinctively, I jerked my head around quickly and looked square into the most vicious face I'd ever seen.
Oh, jeez.
A big man, a huge man, with bared teeth, was set to pounce. And before I could react, he grabbed my shoulder and flung me back, screaming, "Get the hell out of my race and give me those numbers!"
Oh, Jesus, Jock. No.
Jock was livid because this was Bobby Gibbs all over again, but worse. Now this woman had a number. She was official, and there were not supposed to be women officially in the race. There is now a famous photo, Catherine nervously looking over her shoulder, as stocky old Jock, brown hair blowing in the wind, face twisted with rage, is clutching for Catherine. This was the culmination of all the weirdos who had been ruining his race. Quote, then he swiped down my front, trying to rip off my bib number. Just as I leapt backward from him, he missed the numbers, but I was so surprised and frightened that I slightly wet my pants and turned to run.
Whoa.
But now the man had the back of my shirt and it was swiping at the bib number on my back. I was making little cries of, oh, not thinking at all, just trying to get away. When I saw Tiny Brave Arnie bat at him and tried to push him away, shouting, leave her alone, Jock, I've trained her. She's okay, leave her alone. And the man screamed, stay out of this, Arnie! And swatted him away like a gnat.
Oh my God, what?
But now,
see, I would watch marathons if this happened.
The best.
Oh. Now remember, mile 16, a lunatic Scottish man's going to try to denumber you.
Because of your gender. Because
of your gender.
But now her boyfriend, Tom Miller, had had enough.
Oh, I was going to say.
Using his 285 pounds, he body slammed Jock with a well-placed shoulder block.
Oof.
Jock hit the ground winded. Arnie yelled at Catherine to run like hell, and they took off. As they ran, Arnie was saying he was going to kill Jock.
Oh, jeez.
A press truck pulled up beside them with 3 feet of runners. A photographer hung out, getting some nice face shots of her. Then riders in the back of the truck started questioning her. What are you trying to prove? When are you going to quit?
What happened with that Scottish man a mile ago?
When are you going to quit?
Yeah, no, that's good.
Before stuff starts falling out, when do you think you'll wrap this up?
And how will you lead your life with no children? Are you worried that your family name will die with you?
How will you get along with a hairy chest?
What do you think your ovulation cycle is going to be like after this? You're about to be deuterized.
What do you live like as a man?
Huh? Can we look at your ovaries?
Now, Catherine was mad, but she also calmed down and told them she wasn't trying to prove anything. All she wanted to do was run. But she was humiliated by what had happened and wanted to drop out of the race. But that wasn't an option. There was too much riding on the first woman with a number running the Boston Marathon. If she dropped out, people would say women couldn't run a marathon. So she kept on. She knew she would finish even if it was on her knees. Of course, Jock wasn't done.
Oh, boy. Oh God. It's really pitting my understanding for the plight of as a woman against how much I love comedy.
A bus rolled up.
Oh, no. Got a bus now, bitch. Next stop, you.
Jock was standing on the floorboards holding on to the outside door.
Whoa.
Like a character from a Mad Max movie.
Whoa.
Spraying his face.
He's like garbage manning.
Valhalla!
Ah! Yeah, just drinking spray paint for whatever reason.
He shook his fist and screamed, you're all in big trouble!
Whoa, it's us! We're in a lot of trouble! You can't
hide, you can't run. Remember to always be true, no matter what you do. Run it, I never front it. I got my whole cool life on it. Think sharp, man, listen.
You can't hide, you can't run.
Remember to always be true, no matter what you do. Run it, I never front it. I got my whole cool life on it.
Last day might come, so
you can't hide, you can't run.
Late night and in the shadows when the daylight comes. Remember,
you can't hide, you can't run.
Man, listen.
Any day your last day might come, so
you can't hide, you can't run.
From the truth, we know each and every day fights come. Remember,
you can't hide.
It's life, your final destination. You're trying your best to make it. They say be patient, but you know you're cheating. Death is chasing. Heart beating, pulse racing, but I keep the pacing. Trained to be the best and beat the best by the Gracie. Grappler, spectacular, rap for sport or altercation. In self-defense, we hear my muffler tailored alteration. With fire starters, leaving stages up in flames. Then again with firefighters spraying at whatever's blazing. Crazy ways to express and pass information. Daily making the best of bad situations. We fight to win in whatever type protest, but face it, hip-hop came while they were underestimating. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, that's what I was raised in. But then the crack and gangs flourished under Ronald Reagan. Life insurance for kids, undertakers waiting. Earth is purgatory here between the pearly gates and Satan. Any day your last day might come, so
you can't hide, you can't run.
Late night or in the shadows when the daylight comes, remember
you can't hide, you can't run.
Man, listen,
any day your last day might come, so
you can't hide, you can't run.
From the truth, we know each and every day fights come, remember
you can't hide, you can't run.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, listen,
I stay relevant, only person I stand in the shadow of is evidence,
right?
Last page I left off a good look. This ain't the next chapter, it's a whole new book. About to steal the game, I'm a whole new crook. Baking up that fire, I'm a whole new cook. Get your whole ish took. Cali's back under the sun, so
you can't hide and you can't run
from the truth. Some ain't convinced, so they decide to try me. Like I give a f***, we live from India, Ari. They got spies and cameras and trailers. Seen them setting up though, we on camera surveillance. On to me, I'm on to you, it's no mystery. Better think fast though, the future just with history. It's where the plot thickens, regardless of wealth. It's the worst person to run from yourself, darling. Any day your last day might come, so
you can't hide, you can't run.
Late night or in the shadows when the daylight comes, remember
you can't hide, you can't run.
Any day your last day might come, so
you can't hide, you can't run.
Truth, we know each and every day fights come, remember.
Remember to always be true, no matter what you do. Run it, I never front it, I got my whole crew life on it. Think sharp, man, listen. Remember to always be true, no matter what you do. Run it, I never front it, I got my whole crew life on it, on it, on it, on it. Man, listen.
You can't hide, you can't run.
Remember to always be true. No matter what you do. Think sharp. Man, listen.
The music speaks for itself. Yeah.
But then the men around Catherine Running got upset. They were not down with Jock and his threats. They started flipping him off and shouting obscenities at him.
Okay.
Arnie screamed at Jock to, quote, "Get the hell out of here, Jock, leave us alone." He finally took the hint, and the bus sped off, leaving a nice cloud of exhaust for the runners, while laying on the horn for runners in front of them to get out of the way.
Wow.
So far, all the other male racers have been stand-up guys.
Well, now that they know that she doesn't die after 1.5 miles, they've been cool.
Right. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
As the race went on, the tempers came out. Catherine was angry at Tom for hitting Jock so hard.
Wow.
She thought he went overboard.
The dude was trying to take her number.
And Tom was angry. He suddenly yelled at Catherine, "You're getting me into all kinds of trouble!"
She needs to get out of this relationship.
Tom thought he was going to
He's projecting so much.
He now thought he was going to get kicked out of the AAU. He wanted to compete in the Olympics in the hammer throw and thought now that he just hit an official, he was done.
How am I going to become a household hammer thrower name?
Catherine just said he was the one who had hit an official, which she never wanted, and now she was upset that he was starting a fight with her in public in the middle of a race.
Yeah, I'm sure as she's putting womanhood on her back, she really needs to be having like arguments with his hammer-throwing future. Yeah, look, Tom, we can talk about your hammer-throwing future when I'm done changing the Boston Marathon.
I'm sorry, I'm running for an entire gender. Tom ripped the numbers off his front and back, then told Catherine she was too slow and ran off into the pack ahead of her.
Okay. I mean, talk about a guy who's going up and down in my book.
Everyone around them looked embarrassed. Catherine started to cry.
Ugh.
Arnie told her Arnie told her to forget about him and shake it off. And she did. She then caught up to Tom a little while later.
What's up, bitch?
Who asked her to walk with him for a bit.
Oh, really?
She said she couldn't or she'd lose her momentum and passed him by. As she ran off, he yelled, I'd never leave you! Can I just say that Catherine is the epitome of a strong, powerful woman, and Tom is the epitome of the stereotype of the male holding them back.
Yeah. She's like ironing out relationship woes while she's about to finish the marathon.
Like he is – and now he's being a little fucking – oh, yeah. He is literally the stereotype of what so many women think of men. Catherine, Arnie, and the other Syracuse runners finished in 4 hours, 20 minutes. Catherine,
420, dude.
420, brah. Spark it up.
Make a beer.
Tom finished an hour later. The press ratted Catherine. What made you do it? Are you a suffragette?
Oh, God.
Yeah, no, you're – no, yes.
Can we see your penis?
No, yes, I'm running for voting in the 30s.
Oh, interesting.
Why Boston? Why wear numbers? They were all afraid
– What's a stupid question?
They were all afraid that they would be arrested for Tom hitting Jock, but nothing happened. Although Jock had Catherine disqualified from the race for being a woman, even though there were no clear-cut rules that women were not allowed.
Whatever.
A BAA official insisted a podiatrist check her feet right there, and when she took off her shoes, her socks were soaked in blood. The podiatrist lanced blisters and taped her feet. Photos of Catherine running, being attacked, then saved by Tom, and Catherine in bloody socks at the finish line were all over the newspapers that evening. BAA director Will Cloney said, quote, women can't run in the marathon because the rules forbid it. Unless we have rules, society will be in chaos. I don't make the rules, but I try to carry them out. We have no space in the marathon for any unauthorized person, even a man. If that girl were my daughter, I would spank her.
Oh, dude, honestly, most times it's the last sentence.
First of all, not a girl, a woman.
Yeah.
Second of all, you spanking a woman like you've described is how a lot of pornos start.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'd be willing to offer up a spanking now if she were so inclined. As long as she keeps her panties on.
Mm-hmm. Naturally, the reaction of the AAU was the opposite of what should have occurred. The AAU barred women from all races with male runners.
So now what she did was get a rule in that says no women.
Yeah, basically.
God damn it.
If a woman violated the rule, she would be barred from competing in any races for a lifetime.
Yeah, okay, so the rule is the same?
The rule is that women can't run in races, and if a woman runs in a race, then she can't run in a race.
You can't come in here, and if you do, you're not allowed back!
But women did run, just not with numbers. They also pushed the governing bodies to allow women officially into races. So women, you know, Bobby Gibb, and the next year they go out and run again and go, yeah, we're doing it. You can pretend like it's not happening.
Thank you. We'll do that. We'll do that first part you suggested.
And every year we're going to do it. And so more and more and more would just keep showing up and running. And they can't stop them from running along with the guys unless they have a number. But they're going to finish. Finally, the Boston Marathon relented and in 1972 allowed women to run.
If you've looked outside recently, you've noticed that all dogs everywhere are running. Scientists can't explain why all over the world, dogs of every breed are running nonstop. I'm joined now by animal behavior expert, Dr. Charles Davenport. Charles, what can you tell us?
All we know for sure is that the dogs are running fast.
But we don't know why the dogs are running?
There are a few reasons that dogs normally run. Because they're excited or scared, or they see something they want far away, or because they're happy. However, usually, they don't run at the same time or in the same direction.
Do we have any idea where the dogs are running?
West. All the dogs are running west.
All right, well, we're getting reports of many dogs in the west and no dogs in the east. Do we expect the dogs to ever stop running?
We don't know. Animal behavior can evolve over time. Maybe running forever is just what the dogs do now.
Dr. Davenport, is there any chance that the running dogs are somehow related to last night's blue meteor shower or the fact that horses are screaming?
Inconclusive.
Well, please keep us posted. Up next, where are all the children?
Baby. Hello, hello, baby.
What do you want to tell mommy today? What do you want to say to mommy?
Oh.
Does anyone remember this? When Yul Brynner died and came out with that commercial after he was dead? Does anyone remember that?
I'm Yul Brynner and I'm dead now.
What the fuck is this guy selling? Guy crawled through the earth to get a residual check here.
I'm Yul Brynner and I'm dead now because I smoke cigarettes.
It's pretty frightening, you know. But they could have done that with anybody. They could have done it with that Jim Fix guy just as easily.
I'm Jim Fix and I'm dead now.
And I don't know how the fuck it happened. I jogged every day, ate nothing but tofu, swam 500 laps every morning. I'm dead. Yul Brynner drank, smoked, and got laid every night of his life. He's dead.
Shh.
Yul Brynner's chain smoking, drinking, 15-year-old girl sitting on his cue ball noggin every night of his life. I'm running around a dewy track at dawn. We're both dead. God damn it.
Did you guys ever realize how every good night of sleep you get is like a movie trailer for dying? You get a good 10 hours, you're like, oh, that's what it's going to be like. I can't wait.
Keith Richards outlived Jim Fix, the runner and health nut. I'd say the plot thickens. You remember Jim Fix, the guy that used to write books about jogging? Never quite understood exactly what you pinned down about jogging, you know? Right foot, left foot. Faster, faster. Hell, go home, shower. Jim, thanks for writing that jogging book. Jesus. I didn't know about the go home, shower part. I just kept running around in circles. Thank God somebody wrote a book about jogging. Jesus, I was so confused. It's such a complicated thing for a biped. You doofus. Then he goes on to have a heart attack and die while jogging. Ah! There is a God. Right foot, left foot, hemorrhage. Yeah, Jim, we're going to need a happier ending, son. What is this right foot, left foot, blood spurts out nose? What is it? Right foot, left foot, swallow your tongue, turn purple, shish in your jogging shorts. Jim, are you having troubles at home, son? Keith Richards is shooting heroin into his eyeball and still nickel touring. I'm getting mixed signals. I picture nuclear war, two things surviving, Keith and bugs. Where'd everybody go? I saw a bright light. I thought we were on.
Fitness trackers can tell how far you're running, but tomorrow's can tell you why you're running. The new Nike Run Logic Plus pinpoints the desperate psychological demons at the root of your exercise routine. Tech Trends reporter Aaron Vaughn has more.
It's a problem all runners face. You run and you run and you run, but it's never enough. No matter how many miles you put in, that gnawing ache at your soul never goes away. Now Nike's engineers have found a way for runners to use that existential pain to push themselves even farther.
Here at Nike, we're all runners, so we know that running is a painful, tedious, unfulfilling exercise.
Why do people run?
There are a lot of reasons. I mean, maybe it's loneliness. I mean, maybe we hate our families. Maybe we're scared of death. But knowing exactly why you run can terrify runners into going harder and faster than ever.
Users keep the device on their wrist at all times. It not only records running times and distances, it also analyzes all of the user's social interactions and emotional patterns. It then creates a unique, detailed profile that dredges the inspiring well of inner turmoil inside every runner. Early users say they notice a big impact on their workouts.
I started marathoning when I was 28. I thought it was time to get in shape, but then once I realized I was actually running from my meaningless job in ad sales, I started running a lot more, like, all the time.
Oh, I love it. I can just look at the app and see that I'm running instead of dealing with my male body issues directly. It's so much easier than facing my problems head on.
And when you hook the device up to a pair of Bluetooth headphones, it'll even pipe in some mid-workout encouragement.
You've run 2.5 miles. Remember, you feel responsible for your younger brother's death.
Andrew Borman says the best part is seeing satisfied runners use the device's share function to proudly post their running data on social media.
Oh, here's a good one. I'm super afraid that my friends don't really like me. I ran 27 miles today. Now I feel nothing.
And the app's built-in map suggests new routes to push users to their absolute limit. So far, the device is winning rave reviews. Runner's World says no matter what psychological deficiency leads you to run, this gadget will find it. For an amateur runner like me, the Nike Run Logic Plus is a godsend. Knowing that I run because when I look in the mirror I see a decaying corpse with maggots coming out of my eyes keeps me going harder than ever.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Like the fetus type, see the sun retreat. This hype is evil, might it be what I perceive as aight. In a state of decay, Sega's but a few days left. Ain't let it rest since I was fresh up in OCHS. Never seen my senior year, but I never shed a tear. Kept my head up and let in the weapon to let them hear how we lick it off for victory. Synesthesia, feel the imagery. Sympathy, give them clemency. You witnessing the synergy. That's how they shall remember me upon expiration of guard and training. Take them beyond denominations. Stay calm and patient. We gon' make it to our destination. Condolences to those taken in the conflagration. I suppose they get waiting us now. I make them proud when I'm out. Do me that favor and play it loud, loud. Yeah. Utilize the line to rebel. Find a mass of others with like minds in the swell. Reminiscing over this and it ain't hard to tell. Now my daughter know Geo's bars, my heart swell. I've been lost at sea, tossed around in this hell. Till some folks up in the beacon guided me through the swell. Keeping company with heads, more at home or watch well. Send a spring well, the team's looking swell, swell, swell.
You were the cascade, drew in a fast rate. A flood of brothers to the tune of two of the last greats. Arrogance is so passe. My distinction don't apply to rhyme skill. Flow will move them like the shine will. Conciliatory, I built for my affiliates. A guild of spitters, the core of the city is insidious. A war of attrition waged and sick games played. The script scribbled, written to get them on the same page. If obliterated, the kid will make something out of nothing. Divinity in them poured the form, the forge function. Natural born hustler, cousin, you can't touch them for the moment. I'm just showing some love over percussion. Catch a relay when I facilitate. I might check it for the rebate. A couple cents worth for the beat tape. Double if the seed take. Rapid expansion. It is visible all up in the town's mass transit. Hey, keep in mind, for you slide deep in Opine. We in the six, hover with picks and shovels toward the gold mine. Struck and found a diamond on a practice swing. Now the scouts all tout him as an athlete. Respect for the game, sincerely revere the spectator. The kind I often find training to be the next player on the drill out. Blood, sweat, and adrenaline spill out. But faith you will never be without.
Utilize the line to propel you through the parts where the sharks swim around in the swell. What you thought we haven't fought them off, sit for a spell. I spin a yarn about a thousand battles won by the swell. Reinforcing the importance of the bond we well. When you see a standard test on your chest gon' swell. Used to hear it from my grand, now I know how she felt. Play the hand out, boy you lookin' swell. Swell, swell, swell.
Now, go find the others. .com.
When you hear these stories and watch the video, most of us can't help but wonder what we would do if faced with this same type of danger. Experts say it is hard to do, but you have to think you'll make it out.
Have a survival mindset. Understand that you can survive these things.
Slotnick says if you can, the first thing to do is run.